This is an AMI podcast.
Welcome to the best of Double Tap on YouTube.
Your chance to catch up on the videos we posted this week.
Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Double Tap on YouTube. Sean Preece, they must have liked the video because we're back.
It's your own fault. Don't like it and we won't come back.
That's it, exactly. That's how it works around here. That's at least what Mr. F tells me, anyway.
I believe that's against YouTube rules saying please don't like and unsubscribe from our video. Thank you. Don't do that, please.
It's funny, a lot of people I have heard, you know, in my company have used the word unsubscribe a lot. I don't know what that's to tell me. Listen, we promised you Michael Babcock would come back. He is back with us. Michael, back with us again. Hello. Oh, hang on. Yes, must applaud.
Applause.
Hello. Hello, thanks for having me back again. And did you guys remember that they took the amount of dislikes away on YouTube videos? So it used to show you how many likes and how many dislikes. Now it just shows you how many likes are on a video.
That's great, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, nice. That was Steven's idea. Once he saw all the numbers, he thought, hang on.
No, that's not my kind of way of doing things. I'd much rather see the dislike number. I'd be like, because I feel that number's going to be a lot higher in our videos. I don't know, I'm just guessing. I'm not going to say I've looked at our Apple podcast rating, but let's just move on. Okay, so Michael, I want to talk to you because when you were at CSUN, one of the companies you got a chance to catch up with was Sony, and you and I had spoken before the event, because basically, even though you were going there purely for your own purposes, you had people like me constantly getting in touch saying, hey, could you talk to this company? And hey, could you talk to that company? And if you happen to be popping by this company, this could be a good subject to discuss. But one area that was, of course, interesting for me was their new accessible camera, or at least the accessible camera they've been talking about for a while. Two cameras, actually, isn't it? Because there's one which is about, I guess, making it easier for someone with low vision to be able to see what pictures they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one was... or it was including a screen reader and some magnification. So maybe let's start there. Did you get a chance to play with this?
I did, and I don't remember the exact model number because, you know, it's Sony, so their model numbers are not short at all.
No.
But it was kind of interesting. So I am not a person who does a lot with photography, but what was demonstrated to me is the buttons all felt different. So you would know what button you're pressing because of the way that it felt when you were pressing it. They used a version of TalkBack that was on the camera because they were Android-based and allowed you to navigate the camera and get information about what focus mode you have the camera in, or information about the lens, or it even would tell you how the it didn't give you what the photos look like and give you how many people were in the photo, but they did do that with their Sony phones, and they said that information is coming to some of their cameras. What was really interesting, apparently nothing would read. It would just tell you if accessibility was on or accessibility was on. Last year, the accessibility menu would read and it would let you read that, but you know, it was very difficult to navigate other places. This year, the accessibility menu and all the main settings were accessible, but when you actually went into the camera tool itself, it didn't give you feedback based on how many faces were in view. And the gentleman I talked to said, we're just progressively making this a better experience. And what I thought was really interesting is because it's progressively making a better experience, they're getting feedback from people who are actually using these cameras in the wild to say, hey, you know, maybe I don't need to hear this information. Is there a way you can make that be a click or some other form of audible feedback? So if I want to take a picture, I'm not disturbed by the words that are being spoken to me by the camera. You can plug in a headphone or a speaker in order to make that a better experience, or it will just talk right on the camera itself.
I was going to say that wouldn't work very well, would it? You finally got that picture of that deer you've been hunting all season,
yeah.
And your camera says, aperture 5, and the deer just disappears off into the wild. Oh, well, never mind.
Hang on. I want to jump in here quickly about this. We started off and it would just say if accessibility was on or off, but that was the accessibility feature. And then it would just read this menu, but no other menu the next year. That's all fine. Yes, I get it. It's evolving and they're learning and fantastic. But Is that a new camera every time, or is the software simply being updated via a firmware update? And hey, now we're getting a better service. Or is it a case, well, you need the, you know, this latest hardware to actually have the better accessibility?
That's a very good question that I don't have an answer for. So if anyone from Sony is listening, let's hear that. I suspect, though, because these cameras are not cheap. They're not your $200, $300 cameras. I think the one that I was looking at was $2,200 to $2,400 minus the lens, which was another $1,000 that they recommended. So you're looking at $3,300 to $3,500 for a decent camera setup. So I suspect this is software updates, but I could be wrong on that.
I think you're right, though. I think, Michael, it is software updates because... You're right. These cameras are expensive. I'm sitting here in front of, I think, one of the models that they are talking about. I need to get this confirmed from Sony, but I have the A7C camera, which is has been out now for a little while. It's a fantastic camera. I'm benefiting here on YouTube with this amazing camera because of our TV show, Access Tate Live. So I get the benefit of using this wonderful camera on here. But, you know, these cameras are software updatable, and I'd be really keen to know if this is something that's available. Of course, it can also be country specific as well. We're seeing that as a bit of an issue at the minute. So, you know, it might be US only for a while until they develop it further and then it will roll out. But I think it's good to hear this kind of technology is coming out and it is rolling out, but it just sometimes feels a bit too slow compared to if you look at Android, if you look at Apple and what they're doing with their cameras. If I'm blind and I want to take a picture, I'm reaching for my smartphone. So... You know, even with these cameras, and I know there's lots of people, like I think about James Rath, who comes on here with us regularly, and he's a great guy. He wants to use something like this. He's not going to make a film with an iPhone. He probably could, but he would much rather use the kind of technology that all the other professionals are using. Yeah. But look, I don't want to focus too much on that today. I want to talk to you a little bit about the dog.
Oh, no, please.
So for those of you who listened into the show where Michael was on and we touched on this, I kind of wished at that point we had more time to talk about it. And I thought, well, I know where we've got oodles of time. YouTube. So let's go on and wax lyrical about this dog. Aibo, I think, or Aibo. But I think Aibo is how you pronounce it. Yeah. This is a dog that is...
It's not a dog.
That's not a dog. Yeah, exactly. It's a dog that's not a dog. It's a dog that has a plug. in Scotland, we'd say a dog with a plug. And I think that is exactly what this is, right? So... tell us first off, for those who missed the episode, what it was that you got hands on with.
Well, I don't know
and fingers bit with.
Yeah. I don't know if it has a plug or if it wirelessly charges. Maybe when it goes and lays down on his bed, it charges. I should look into that. So the
USB socket is.
So the robotic dog that I played with Sony, I was standing listening to someone demonstrate the accessible TVs that Sony has and some of the accessibility improvements that they have, and I heard this. Weird noise off to my left, and I reached my hand over because, you know, as a blind person at a conference, you know, you got to put your hands on everything.
Yes,
and I'm like, oh, this is what it is. It's this weird thing that's moving around. And someone came by and said, oh, that's Aibo. And I'm like, okay, what is Aibo? I've never heard of that. And he said, it's a robotic dog that you can let do its own thing. So it feels about the size of a small Labrador puppy. It has no fur, so that's the first weird thing. There are different textures.
Hang on. You're saying it's weird that it doesn't have fur. Wouldn't it be more weird if it did have fur? That would cross a line, wouldn't it?
I don't know, actually, because...
No, it wouldn't cross a line.
I think it would be more cuddly then. Like, yeah. You might want to be...
Cuddly? It's made of plastic and...
Exactly. Right now it's made of plastic. Why don't you... Yeah. Anyways, didn't have fur. It did have sensors all over its body, though. So if you scratched its behind its ears, which is a weird feeling, scratching plastic. But if you scratch behind its ears, it will, if it liked that, will give you positive reinforcement. The tail does wag. And if you rub it under its chin, it's like that. If you rub it under its chin and you stop for a minute because you're talking to the person, it might bite your finger and say, hey, no, like nip at your finger and say, hey, no, I liked that. Keep doing it. What's really cool about the Aibo is it learns what you like. So, for example, if you if it
like
does something
chicken.
That you, there, yeah,
does
yeah,
it, does I it wonder, like that?
But it won't eat your chicken.
Excellent, yes. Well, that's what it will only have chips. That's what it'll have, chips.
Hey! Chips and fingers.
It's a robot dog, chips. Anyway, never mind.
So it does have the ability to, if you call it a good dog, it'll keep doing the same behavior. If you tell it no, then it's going to stop doing that behavior. I came home and learned something that Steven apparently already knew, and that is you can buy accessories for the dog as well to connect it.
You can get a water bowl. You can get a food bowl for it. Oh, I've been pricing these up.
Yeah. And do you guys remember, on the show, I called them Neopets. Do you remember Tamagotchi? Does that sound
familiar? Tamagotchi, of course.
Yes. Yes, that's what I was thinking of. My wife corrected me after the show. So it's a lot like the Tamagotchi, but you actually have a physical animal in space that you can play with as well. Or connect it to the app and make friends with other dogs across the world.
Right, stop, stop. This is absolutely ridiculous. What a total waste of time we're talking here. What are you on about? Why are you so interested in this, Stephen?
I think this is kind of where AI is going to start becoming potentially more interesting to me, right? I mean, right now it's like, okay, I can write a list of things, or I can feed it an article and say, oh, tell me, you know, 5 bullet points from this article, and that's all lovely and great. But, you know, when AI starts building itself into this kind of technology, so you can have an animal that kind of starts to get to know you and starts to, you know, become friendly towards you and knows what you like and all this stuff, I think that could get interesting. Look, we've already talked on the show quite a lot about AI assistants and AI, I guess you would maybe call
companions.
Friends? Companions, yeah. Mm. You know, I think about Call Annie, for example, the app Call Annie. You know, what's the difference here? Apart from the fact that Annie can talk. I mean, arguably the dog could probably talk as well if they wanted it to.
Is there any AI in this? Do we know that? Or is this simply just a set of a limited pattern of routines? Is this powered by AI? Is there any sort of computer vision in there where it's looking at you, can recognise faces and voices? Do we know anything about this?
It's got AI in its name.
No, has it? IBO?
IBO. IBO.
Okay. Where's the A in IBO?
What?
I don't know.
Is it A-I-B-O?
Oh, okay. IBO. What does the B-O stand for?
Good boy.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
What happened for Sony all of a sudden?
I suppose this goes back then to a previous conversation that we've had about whether AI could actually be, is useful as a social companion. You know my concerns about that. I don't know. We've seen this for the longest time with these robot dogs. Sony's robot dog has been about for decades, I believe. It's been out for a long time. I can just see it's got a limited set of functionality there that you're going to play out pretty soon. Does it really sort of change its patterns, change its behaviour in a way that does feel more than just a toy? Then we're talking something very interesting. But other than that, I just see this as the next Furby. Do you remember
Michael, what do you think?
I do remember those. I think I'm getting distracted by trying to find an answer to Sean's question. And I was looking, and there's software updates that are pushed to the dog. They pushed their last software update in October of 2023. So I think the answer to your question, Sean, is yes, it can do different actions than just the basic actions that are available. One of the update notes that they have is that Abo shows more... richer behavior when attached to the charging station. So I think that with updates, the Abo grows. Physically, though, I don't think it's going to grow, which could be discouraging.
Thank goodness for that. No, that
yes. At least it doesn't eat, too.
Yeah, exactly. No, but no, look, I want to just hang on, because I know you're getting wrapped up in the Abo, because that's what I'm talking about. But I'm kind of talking this more about a concept rather than so much as something, a product. Because I mean, this particular robot dog is about $3,000 almost. It's about $2,900. So it's, you know, realistically, people aren't going to go out and buy these en masse at this stage. I think if they had priced these at $200 to even $300 or even $500, perhaps. But at the moment, at the price level, it's not going to be going out of the door. This is concept stuff, and that's what I want to talk about. I wonder if this is where we should be going with this kind of technology. Does this help people? Could this be good for people? I mean, there's already studies coming out saying, you know, this kind of thing. I mean, we already know the value of pets, but the challenge is then you're having to have dogs in perhaps challenging environments. Maybe people who live at home who would love to have an animal but just could not look after one. You can see some real benefits for this kind of thing, you know, from a social point of view.
Yeah, so I have told a couple of people that maybe if you have cognitive challenges or you're someone who doesn't want the responsibility of taking care of a dog, but you still want the companionship and the ability to have something that is yours, but you don't have to worry about taking it out. You don't have to worry about feeding it. Apparently, it does have facial recognition, so it can recognize that you are the person in the house and then come to you. And having that emotional attachment to something that recognizes you and knows that you are the person that is in charge of that thing can give someone who may struggle with attachment and being able to attach themselves to a animal might find comfort in having a automated tool come up to it and say, hey, and wag its tail and be happy to see you.
I'm not convinced. About this artificial intelligent companionship that makes me uneasy, and I can't put my finger on it. I think what I'm looking for is something needs to have a personality. Our pets, maybe it's a projected personality that we put on our pets, but every single dog out there has its own personality. And I'm not convinced yet that AI can actually develop as its own individual personality and not just a set of, okay, you've tickled its chin, so now it's going to do, you know, routine A and then routine B. So, I know where you're going with it, though, Stephen. And I do get your point as well, Michael, that maybe there is a companionship level when it comes to something like this as a cyber pet.
Is it your fear that we start to cross the line between, because I get it with pets, right? We all understand the connection. We've all had the connection. All three of us have had connection with animals. So we know the impact they can have when you lose a pet, for example, the impact that it can have on you, because it's a real living thing. This is not a real living thing. Or is it? This is the question. When it comes to AI, I think a serious question is going to come at some point about, you know, what is life? What is it in terms of its consciousness and its capability?
Let's sort that out and get the answer now on this YouTube episode.
Yeah, this is absolutely the place we'll figure this one out. What is life? Yeah, what is it?
Do you remember the Black Mirror episode where robot dogs took over the world and hunted us down like animals?
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Okay. I do get the concern around the companionship aspect. I think there's a new social stigma that will come with this. You know, the social stigma will be, you know, oh, there's that guy or that girl who, you know, thinks they're talking to a real animal, but it's actually a robot pet. But that person has a real deep connection with that. And you know, it will be that unconditional love, I guess, that you would get from the device that you wouldn't get, or you would get with an animal, but perhaps that person can't look after an animal. I think that's what I'm getting at.
Some people think that people who talk to their actual real pets like that have some sort of weird issue as well. They see that in the same way. I totally get it. Mm-hmm. It just seems that I think we're nowhere near that level of sophistication when it comes to something like the Aibo, where it could be perceived and even form an emotional attachment to in that
way.
Hey,
look, if people are out there, people are marrying skyscrapers and, you know, trees and whatever else. If that's what you want to do. These people that do, I don't know, people on Facebook that tell me to do these things. It's been very interesting. Michael, thank you for coming back on to talk about it. This is a conversation we could have a lot of debate and discussion around. I can't wait to hear your comments as well on this. Comment below, drop us an email, feedback@doubletaponair.com. Or you can call us on the old dog and bone, get it? Telephone. 1-877-803-4567. I've been told in my ear by the person who doesn't exist that time is up. Michael, thank you so much for coming back on.
Thanks for having me again.
You're listening to the best of Double Tap on YouTube.
We've been talking about CSUN quite a bit here on YouTube. And, of course, it's an incredible event. Lots of great opportunities to learn about big companies, small companies, lots of interesting new tech as well. And I wanted to focus in today on two particular companies that perhaps wouldn't get the spotlight. You know, everyone tends to talk about the big tech companies that are there. One, for example, that everyone's been excited about is Glidance. We spoke to Amos Miller, of course, the developer of that, the founder of that company, on Double Tap over on The Daily Show. And everyone seems really excited by that product. And the idea of this kind of device being built by a blind person, I think, if I'm honest, that's a big part in its... not success, because it isn't out yet, so we don't know if we can say success. But the interest in it, yeah. I think that's true. There's a lot of interest in it because a blind guy actually invented it. Hurrah! And he knows the deal, right? He knows what we need. He knows what we'd be looking for in that kind of device.
The secret
that's the impression
source.
I got. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And this sort of technology isn't unique. Basically, since the arrival of the self-driving car technology, everyone's been trying to squeeze this down and throwing it on us in some form or another. So this isn't new by any means, but it's all about trying to work out which form factor works best for us, where we wear it on our head, around our waist as a belt, strap it to our chest, or in front of us in the case of Glidance. But the point of this case is that as a blind person has come up with this, we're hoping for great things from this one.
Well, our reporter Tim was out at CSUN for us, and he got the chance to catch up with a couple of companies. And, you know, it's interesting because the debate we've been having over on our Daily Show is around the best use of resources when it comes to investment into research into new mobility aids. And one of the debates, which we're going to continue here on YouTube in a couple of episodes' time, I want to talk about this in more detail. You know, what are we looking for from new smart technology? And CC in Montreal got in touch with us to say, you know what, I wish companies would just come up with a better idea, a simpler idea, arguably, which is to make a really strong white mobility cane, right? Just make a really strong one that can last, you know, more than someone standing on it and it's snapping or the elastic breaking or whatever it might be. And I thought that was really interesting. And it put me in mind of one particular company who Tim spoke to for Access Tech Live, our TV show. And it's a Werewolf, the company behind the all-terrain cane.
I am Deborah Epstein, and I am the Chief Marketing Director for A Werewolf Gear. We are developers of super strong, durable canes that is a cross between a trekking pole and a mobility cane for the blind. My husband himself has retinitis pigmentosa, so he's mostly blind, and he wanted to stay hiking on the trails of Sedona, Arizona. So he needed something that was going to be able to support him on the trails, keep him safe and visible and mobile. The all-terrain cane is what we started out with. It has a 16-inch grip. It has a flip lock with an adjustable handle. It's made out of titanium, and it's super strong joint made out of a stainless steel. So if you're out just with a hiking stick or a trekking pole, it can't feel the terrain. Blind people need to be able to hear what's going on in the terrain, like the rocks, the smoothness. They need to feel it, hear it, and experience it in a different way than a sighted person. Also, what our cane does is allow any oncoming hikers to see that there's something different here. This person isn't just like me and can see. I need to have a little extra support and a little extra visibility. It's made to support your weight, which is something they tell you immediately in O&M instruction, not to lean on your cane, not to use your cane for support. And this is like breaking that paradigm because we want you to lean on it. You can find us at werewolfgear.com and you can purchase there.
So there you go, Sean. That is the answer to all of our problems. No more broken canes. You've got one you can climb mountains with if you want.
Well, I mean, you could argue like it's a different thing altogether than what we've been looking at previously when I was talking about Glidance and everything else. We've seen Lumen, WeWalk Cane. Well, yeah, so many we've seen already. But the fact of the matter is, I think that this is far more actually usable or practical in our community than that tech. Of course, we're looking for tech to solve some sort of problem or answer some questions or however you want to put it. But actually, a cane that doesn't snap or is more durable is far more of interest to me than anything else at this minute.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no tech here, right? I mean, the tech is perhaps in the design, in the
material
R&D that
science,
goes into it. Exactly.
Stephen Scott.
Yes, thank you. But that's the actual end device is not tech. And I have to be honest, that does appeal to me, if I'm honest. Kind of like the idea of this not being particularly tech-focused for once, and it actually being something that is practical, that is usable. And again, this was designed and developed by a blind guy. Very interesting story. Thanks to Deborah Epstein for telling us about the product, and we look forward to hearing more about it in the future. I'm quite keen to get my hands on one of these, actually. There's a few new types of canes out there. I'm kind of keen to try the no jab cane as well. That's also quite interesting, where it has like a spring inside at the handle. And so if you accidentally... Yeah, exactly.
We could joust each other. That'd be great. It's a whole new game we come up with.
Get that into the Paralympics immediately.
Blind joust. That should be
blind great. Jousting. Yeah. I'd end up taking out probably my other eye with that result.
It's true, though, because when you think about it, if you look at something like the cane, which has been around for the longest time, and with good reason, because it works so well, but you think there are some things that I think, you know, we maybe should look at again. Why can't we have a height-adjustable cane? Why have we got to pick a certain height when we buy the cane? Why can't it be adjustable? Is the folding segments the way it does that? Is that the best way we can do it with today's technology, with today's engineering? Is there a better way? I'm forever trying to unfold up my cane when I'm trying to get in a taxi or something. And if it's cold or if it's been raining and my hand's slipping on it, you can't force it apart and you end up jumping in the taxi with half a cane folded up. I mean, is there a better way to keep it clean once you've been, you know, waving it around on the floor? Is there a way to keep it cleaner so you haven't always got to chuck your cane on the floor? The tip would retract somewhere where it wouldn't be in contact with somewhere else. These are things that we should look at, and maybe it's another. Yeah, it's time we look at the cane again, but not from let's bolt a smartphone camera to it. Just, you know, a different way.
Yeah, absolutely, 100% on that. And staying with the practical tips, because this is another thing, right? It's about sometimes having tools that can help us do things. So, you know, we have heard of so many apps out there for various functionalities. I mean, for blind people, Be My Eyes, Aira, Seeing AI. These are staples in our smartphone diet, arguably. You know, these are apps that we use every day, and they're fantastic. But then you think about low vision and people who are trying to use their smartphone, say, as a magnifier. What tools are out there to actually make that possible? Because it's not always easy to hold your phone over a document all the time, try and use the app and also read whatever it is you're trying to read at the same time. You don't want to have your fingers on the device as you're trying to read something, right? So this is where this company Case for Vision came in. Let's hear from Igor from the company who explains more about the product they were showing off at CSUN this year.
My name is Igor Feinberg. I'm managing partner of Case for Vision LLC. We created a product from an idea that evolved from about 10, 15 years ago. And the product is a combination of a hardware protective case for iPhone or any other smartphone and our own proprietary application, which is also called Case for Vision. This is a case for a smartphone that enables you to magnify text or see objects in the distance. Our product is very, very easy to use. All you have to do is put your own phone into Case for Vision, open the legs, and use it as a stand above any printed material you want to view, magnify, or pan live image, so you don't have to move printed material under the camera. You can also change the contrast, and you can zoom in on any part of the text. You can freeze the image, you can save the image, and it saves into your library on your own phone, and then you can share that with your friends or family. The other side of the Case for Vision would have a little lever which, when engaged, enables a mirror, optical mirror, to see at a distance, and it becomes at 45 degrees. The distance viewing is a very useful feature. You can see a student in a classroom can see the whiteboard or blackboard and record what's going on on a whiteboard or blackboard.
So there you go, Case for Vision showing off their product, which, again, is a simple idea, but really practical. And I think in some ways that's the thing that you kind of miss at CSUN when you're not there in person. You miss all these kind of really cool practical tools that are available because they don't get the headlines. They're not going to, you know, TechCrunch isn't going to write about Case for Vision. With all due respect to the people at Case for Vision, it's not that kind of device people are going to talk about. But that's why we're here, right? We can talk about it and we can shine a light on it. So first off, thanks to Tim for going around and speaking to all these people.
Yeah.
Of course, more of that you can catch up with and all of our reporting over on Access Tech Live. You can find that on AMI TV, AMI Plus, and of course here on YouTube as well. Just search for Access Tech Live. You can catch up with all the episodes. We've had some really interesting conversations on a wide range of PAN disability topics. Check out Access Tech Live here on YouTube and, as I say, on AMI Plus. But this is why we want to talk about these kind of devices, because there are things. I remember once there was a device called the Giraffe Stand, which kind of did similar to this. And it was built, I think, for seeing AI at the time, or maybe an OCR app. I can't remember. It was built for a purpose.
Maybe it was KNFB Reader back in the day. That was the king of the hill.
Yes, I think you're right, yeah.
And it's something as simple as, it's just something which holds the smartphone in the right position over somewhere where you place a document. I mean, it's as low-tech as that, but it just makes the whole process easier because everything's in place. You don't have to move the phone around, make sure everything's in frame, because it's positioned in exactly the right position.
And
it's
I
great.
Think people might think, well, surely there must be something on Amazon you could buy that could do this, right? Because that's the thing. You immediately jump online, you think there must be an answer out there. But there often isn't for this kind of category, because these are not apps that everyone is using all the time. These are not apps for everyone. And again, the other thing here is, okay, we're talking about low vision people, but there's lots of people in that category and could find benefit. There's lots of people who might be using their smartphone camera for other purposes. They may want to be able to just have their phone just hovering over the desk, not flying flat on it. Lots of reasons to like these products. Anyway, that was just a little snapshot into a couple of other products that were spotted by our Tim while he was at CSUN. I thought we'd share with you today on YouTube. So keep in touch. Drop us a comment below. We'll continue our conversations. I'm going to be getting into this subject of what we want from our mobility aids going forward. You know, snapping, as you say, a smartphone onto it isn't the answer to our problems, I don't think. But what do we want? What do we need? So we'll maybe get into that in a future episode. Comment below. And, of course, email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. You can always find us on social media as well. Just search for Double Tap. And we'll catch you again soon. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is the Best of Double Tap on YouTube. Find more videos and subscribe now by heading to YouTube and searching for Double Tap Video Now.
Michael Babcock is back with us. Michael Babcock's back on the show. Hello, hey! Michael.
Hello. I wasn't sure what I was going to do without the applause this time, so appreciate it.
There you go. We don't have the actual applause on YouTube because that costs extra. We will get a copyright strike from the applauding people.
But they can't copyright you from applauding yourself, right?
I don't think they can. No,
not yet.
Not
They'll
yet.
Try.
No, absolutely. This was your first CSUN, right? It was your first CSUN. And what were you expecting from it?
I was expecting big crowds because that's what everyone said. Oh, this is going to be a place where it's going to be busy. I was not expecting the size of crowd that I experienced. It was a lot more people than I was anticipating. And at a couple of times, I got a little overwhelmed. I was using Ira to help me find the door to get out of the exhibit hall. And it was funny because we kept finding these doors. So I'd open the door and they'd be like, nope, this is another service area. Nope, this is another service area. By the third time, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to chill here for a little bit just to get my bearings. And then I'll just go back into the hall and see what I can find then.
So this would be a good way to test Ira's capabilities, right? Because I guess everybody was on using Ira. So if you couldn't get through to anyone at Ira for a little while, it was probably because CSUN was happening.
That would be my guess.
Yeah. It's the Hotel California. You can never leave. That's the trouble.
Between Good Maps and Ira, though, I was able to navigate that hotel pretty confidently. I used the Indoor Explorer, I think it's called, by Good Maps, and I hadn't ever played with this before. It works really interestingly. You open the app and then it tells you, pan your phone from left to right with the back facing camera facing outwards. And that would work just fine. And then I would be standing there moving my phone around, like just trying to get it to capture onto a signal, kind of like in the olden days when you were just trying to get a satellite signal from the antenna. And I don't know how many times people come up to me and be like, do you need some help? I'm like, no, I'm okay. I'm trying this new app out. So if I had one complaint, it would be, please figure out how to connect to your location a little bit faster than some instances, 30 to 45 seconds. But I was able to use that, and then it would ask me, where do you want to go? And I would tap on, you know, the exhibit hall, or I'd tap on nearest restroom or nearest elevator. And then it would tell me, walk 20 feet, turn left, walk 15 feet, slight right, and gave me those details. Wow. And for the most part, it was pretty accurate. I was kind of impressed. And where it wasn't accurate, I would just open Ira and call them. And Good Maps does have Be My Eyes integration, so you can call Be My Eyes representative. But I just used Ira because it was there.
That is so cool. That's something I think we're still sort of waiting on, is that indoor navigation, right? But I'm guessing then that the Good Maps is it's almost preloaded with the location, right? They've set this up in advance.
Yeah, they had to go and record pretty much, and I don't know the technical terms for it. It's a more casual show, so I don't have to know all those words.
No.
But they had to go pretty much video the inside of the hotel and map that in their system. So they did have, I think there's 5 or 6 locations in the U.S., so it's definitely not widely available, and that's why I was excited to try it out there.
Yeah, it feels like it would be so cool if that was something that could almost map as itself as you go along. Or I guess maybe people themselves can do this. I mean, we've seen apps that do this. Seeing AI has it built in now, where you can almost map. I mean, it's good for mapping, say, for example, going from a reception in a hotel lobby up to your room.
Right.
Although you tried that, Sean, and I think that was a complete disaster, wasn't it?
Yes, hit and miss. Yeah. Clue has been the best so far, but Seeing AI was the easiest to actually set up, just pretty much like Michael was describing there with Good Maps. You just look around you, basically, with the rear-facing camera. So that was cool, but Clue is very nice as well. It just seems like we need all these technologies together to make the perfect app.
But it's the... You said overwhelmed. I guess it's the number of people. And it was interesting because when you were on with us on Access Tech Live talking about this experience, Mark Aflalo said to you, hey, it's not CES numbers. But that was such an interesting comment, actually, because you were talking 120,000 people versus 3,600 people. You would think, well, okay, yes, numbers-wise, a lot less. But like you said, and I think quite rightly, we're talking here about canes, guide dogs, and, you know, the majority are blind people. So, you know, everyone's trying to get around. I remember my own experience at an NFB convention and exactly that, you know, being sort of trapped inside. And I actually thought at one point, I'm never going to get out of this cane mangle that I've just got myself into. You know, I think I came home with 2 extra canes and a dog that I didn't even own because there was just so much entanglement going on. And it can get a little bit overwhelming, can't it?
In the sensory overload. So I am not a go to a party, have music up loud, you know, individual, because when I want to have a conversation with someone, I want to actually be able to hear them. There was a lot of instances where I found it to be difficult to hear people. And I'm a fairly social person. I texted my wife and I said, man, I'm feeling like I'm antisocial right now. She said, you are the most social person I know. What do you mean? And it's because I shut down when environments get loud because I don't know what's going on. And I think there were some potentially missed opportunities there. But again, you got to go with where you're comfortable too.
That's so true. That almost, I call it the sports hall effect, that sort of echoey, crowded noise, it just becomes overwhelming. I can relate to that so much.
All of this being said, I will go back next year, and I hope to see both of you there, because it was a fun experience.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, I'm thinking about going next year. So, I mean, it's the 40th year, right, for CSUN, so a big event for them, obviously. It's a great opportunity to go and to catch up with my people, the blind people. Rock on. And, you know, I think it's... Well, I don't know. What else do I say, right?
Let's go with that.
But yeah, I think it's a great opportunity to catch up with people, find out what's going on. It is, I mean, it's, the social aspect is, I think, the biggest thing, which is interesting because considering what you've just said, the reason a lot of people go to CSUN is for exactly those meetings, to catch up with people. And those incidental conversations. You were talking, and I hope I'm not speaking outside of school here, but you were talking about a product, and the person who had created the product walked up behind you and said, hello.
Hello, are you talking about the product that I made? And we're like, yes, we were. It also gave me an opportunity to join some betas. Like, Envision, I'll mention that one, the Envision Assistant. I don't think I would have actually gotten on that beta if I wasn't live in person to be able to connect with them, because there are limited seats. So you get those opportunities that maybe you would have missed out on just by watching the news.
So what's your recommendation when it comes to going to something like this? I mean, you've been there once and you've done other events. You've been to lots of different events like the NFBs and the ACB events in America and so on. But what is in your, what's in your kit bag when you go? I mean, what are you taking with you? What are you thinking about? What are you thinking that maybe you should have taken with you this year that would have helped you?
I'm holding up a accessible portable power bank, 10,000 milliamp, because it slips right into my pocket. Connected to that is my Zoom H1E. I'll probably upgrade this to the 4 or the 6. I used to never be a record person, record where I'm at, but I have some recordings that will never see the light of day, at least for the most part, but they're for memory purposes. Like, this was me on the airplane. There's no need for anyone to hear that, but I have become one of those people who just capture random recordings because who knows how my memory will be in a couple of years and if I'll remember the experience. So that's pretty good. I bring my iPhone. I actually brought the Samsung phone today and did not pull it out of my, or this time, and did not pull it out of my backpack. Nothing to get Samsung. It's just the iPhone always worked for me. And then I need to find a good to-go microphone that I can use because I was using the MacBook Air microphone. So I did bring the MacBook Air. Longtime listeners know that I thought for a very brief period of time last year I was going to run around with a big power bank and a Mac Mini. Glad that my wife talked me out of that.
We all talked you out of that, Michael. It was a terrible idea.
Everyone did. And then the Apple Watch. I take that and I have just press record on it, again, for that capturing information. Maybe I don't have the Zoom H1E ready. I just tap the screen and then just press record in the bottom left corner, and all of a sudden I'm capturing recordings, and it's actually a pretty decent microphone.
What about the hotel experience?
The hotel experience was pretty decent. I will say, find a roommate so you don't have to pay the outrageous prices for the hotel. Thankfully, that was the opportunity for me. So I had a roommate, and he's like, yeah, feel free to crash in my room. I got no problem with that. So that was fun. Yeah, the hotel experience was great. I did not use it this time, but it was a Marriott hotel, and Marriott uses their electronic keys, so you can sign into the Marriott app and then just touch the back of your phone against the lock on your door, and then it unlocks your door, so you don't even have to fiddle with plastic keys, and that's been handy. And then if you're a Braille reader, or at least someone who can read Braille numbers, that can be helpful when there's Braille on the doors. And there's a lot of hotel rooms, so.
You're listening to the Best of Double Tap on
YouTube. The solar eclipse is coming up on April 8th. Are you excited about the solar eclipse, the celestial event?
Oh, a celestial event makes it sound very grand, but I'll be honest with you, usually not, because it's a very visual thing, right?
How dare you? Well, you know what? Not anymore. Not anymore. Because as if by magic, look, we've got Janine Stanley with us from IRA.
Hi.
Hello, Janine. Lovely to have you here. And you're going to tell us all about why IRA is helping us blind folk enjoy the celestial event. I like saying that.
That's right. Around the world, in fact. So on April the 8th, of course, the auspicious date, between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S., which is, now that your clocks have changed there, I believe about 7 p.m. in the U.K. And, of course, the eclipse is going to be going over Eastern Canada. So you folks will be in that Eastern to Atlantic time zone as the eclipse goes past. I believe it goes right over Halifax, I want to say. But we will be taking part in an event in Rochester, New York, called, and this will never get this song out of your head, Total Eclipse of the Park.
Oh, very good.
I know.
Oh, well done.
It was brilliant.
Who's in charge of puns over there?
You know, we didn't name it, so I can't claim it, unfortunately. But it is a good one, and now Janine has to find royalty-free copies of that song. So, yeah.
Good luck with that.
Goody.
So what's going to happen then? Are we going to get described action, essentially? Get a full description of what's happening?
We will. So what they're doing, they're having this big event in the park from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. We're covering points where the sky is actually changing between 2 and 4. And they're going to have a short program, but then they have all kinds of activities around the park, like beep baseball, audio darts, which I'm really jealous because I love audio darts, and something called cornhole, which I don't know if you guys know about in the UK, but cornhole is you take a beanbag. And there's a board, and you throw it in the holes. It's sort of, I can't even describe cornhole, but they've made it an audio game, and we're going to learn about that. There are all kinds of
social services. I hope your description of the celestial event is better than cornhole.
Yeah, exactly. Well, our visual interpreters are going to be doing the description, so I'm sure it'll be way better than what I can give of cornhole. But there are also going to be guide dog puppies from one of the guide dog schools. They are their puppy group. Puppies are going to be watching the eclipse.
Oh,
yeah,
that's nice. What about their eyes?
Oh, well, they will be protected. They'll be wearing their little doggles, I'm sure. Their little dog sunglasses. They do make such a thing, honest to God. Their
That's
little
amazing.
Dog sunglasses. Yep. And we will be doing our programming through YouTube, live on YouTube. So go to our YouTube channel and subscribe, and you'll get a notification when we go live. Excitement. And from 3:20... to about 3:25, which is the time of totality when the moon is totally covering the sun, we will be broadcast live throughout the park describing the sky, describing the corona around the moon, which is the waves that come out from the actual sun. And I'm told they're green. For years, I thought they were like red and orange, you know, like the pictures you saw of the sun as a kid. No, they're green. And that will be interesting to see. And then as the sky lightens again and as the moon moves on, we'll describe a little bit of that. And then we'll go back to our feed on YouTube and the park will go about its business. But you can listen as we go around the park and watch people reacting and take a look at some more activities around the park. So should be a fun time. We're also going to take a look. They have something called a light sound box. And these were specially made at, I want to say Harvard, but I could be wrong. It could be MIT. But these boxes are placed around the park, and they've distributed them around the country, actually. And they play sounds, tones, actual music, basically, based on the amount of light that there is. And when we get to totality, they're totally quiet. And as the sky brightens again, they begin to make noise again so that people can experience the eclipse through sound.
Wow. That sounds eerie.
Yes, it is. I remember the last one in 2017, and it was very eerie in that time between, you know, after the totality. The agent described my backyard as looking misty and like this medieval forest, which I thought was really cool. But
could also be an insult.
A little creepy.
Yeah, it always looks like that. Does it?
That's true, actually. That's pretty true, unfortunately.
Do you think, now I've been on record as saying, I don't care about the solar eclipse. Now, let me, no. There is a caveat to this. That's because I've never really had the opportunity to enjoy it. Do you think this is going to draw more people in, obviously? Do you think it's going to draw people into the event itself?
Well, I hope so. Because, you know, if you have lost your vision or you were born without vision and you really okay, why am I looking up at the sky? I don't care. There are a whole lot of changes, though, in the environment. There's a bit of wind before the totality. And then everything gets really still and quiet. The animals go quiet. Sometimes crickets will come out for, you know, 30 seconds or so. It's everything changes, and you can actually feel it change. And the whole reason for this event in Rochester was that the one of the organizers, Kirsten Smith, is a lady who is losing her vision, and I believe she has RP, which I know you guys can relate to. And she said in 2017, when the last total eclipse went over, she sat on her front porch and said, "What's the big deal?" And then she realized everybody was having parties. They were getting, you know, learning about eclipses and all this stuff. And she was alone. And she said, "I am never going to let that happen to anybody else again. We're going to have fun." NASA has distributed around 11,000 of these tactile booklets about the eclipse, so you can actually feel what is happening in the sky. Here's a diagram of the sun, the earth, and the moon in relation to each other in size in the diagram. They've got a map of the U.S. that shows the path of the eclipse tactily. So, you know, there's all kinds of information that you can get about it. And we will be there. We're going to be providing eclipse information, fun facts, all kinds of stuff. It's plus, kind of, describing the event.
I mean, it's kind of easy to write this off, right, as a bit of a joke and, you know, a bit of fun and mm-hmm. all of that. But, you know, you bring up such an interesting point. There's so many aspects, there's so many facets to space that people want to know about. Children especially, blind kids will just want to soak this stuff up, right? And so do the blind adults as well. But, you know, also thinking about the kids, those that want to get into science or work in the science field, you know, this can feed that imagination and make it possible for them to dream about getting into that kind of job, which is possible now, right?
Absolutely possible. And there is so much information now and so much ability to access things in the STEM arena for kids, for adults, whatever. It's a great time to, you know, be a blind person trying to go into this, as opposed to, you know, many, many years ago when I was starting out and I would have loved, I was such a nerd as a kid. What has changed?
As a kid?
You know, I would have so loved this and loved to have access to some of this stuff. But we're really hoping that this brings the eclipse to everybody in the world, because we know it doesn't go over everywhere. It's going over a good swath of the United States. Even if you are just on the edges of it, you're still going to see the sky change and hear your environment change and all that. But to be able to experience that corona around the sun, I can't wait to get the description of that. Now, everybody cross your fingers for no clouds.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That would be the ultimate. We have heavy cloud cover. but
especially for New York, they have, right? That's always a fear.
Oh, yeah. This is and this is northern New York, pretty close to the Canadian border. So it is in Rochester, New York, which is a huge technology city. They also have the Rochester Institute, and they have a lot of folks who are deaf there, Rochester Institute of Technology, which is obviously exactly what it sounds like, huge engineering school, and lots of deaf folks happen to attend there. And this event, they really pulled out all the stops for accessibility. They've got ASL interpreters. They have made sure there are accessible pathways throughout the park. There are quiet zones for people who need that kind of time out from busy activities. There are just all kinds of aspects of this thing that have been coordinated. So we're excited to take part. And you guys get a breaking news item. Check your IRA app over the weekend and check our social media for updates to your app, because there's going to be a special feature that's going to get turned on, we hope, in the app so that you can go right into YouTube from the IRA app.
Oh, very clever. Oh, I was going to ask you about the app. Yeah, because
it's
about
all I can say right now, but that secret. Is...
Takes me back to the IRA Live days, you know, when you did your live events.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what it's going to be, Stephen. We're re-inaugurating IRA Live and doing it a bit differently right now. It's going to be for public-type events, not for personal things yet. Yet, we say. However, things are developing pretty rapidly, and stay tuned for other events that we're going to cover throughout the year. So we're going to try to do 1 to 2 a month, but that may increase. So you never know. But check your IRA app over the weekend to see if it it updates, and if it does, you will want to get the update.
Definitely. I think that's something that maybe people don't really know about IRA, is the IRA Live aspect of it.
Yeah, IRA Live was a feature that was in our original legacy app, and it allowed you to do have your session broadcast. You could get the audio broadcast out to other people. So they would tap on the IRA Live app, or tab down at the bottom of the screen. Then they would see everybody who was going live at that point in time. They could tap on a stream if it was made public. You could also make a stream private by giving it an access code. And we did that for some conferences, which we're going to do also later in the year. We'll have things like the Disability In Conference, where you'll get a conference code if you're an attendee, and you'll get to hear the keynote presentations described, things like that. But IRA Live, people did everything from show you their breakfast, which, you know, some TikTok folks did, was funny. And one guy developed quite a following, actually. They took people on walks. I went through the horse barns at the state fair, which Janine was in her happy place with horses. And people got to hear an hour of me talking baby talk to horses, and that was, I'm sure, highly entertaining.
I think I remember that. I remember that. Just when you said baby talk to horses, that rings a bell to me.
Yes, I let them chew on me and slobber on me and all that stuff. Yeah. So big fun, big fun. And I am a horse girl from way back, so.
Well, listen, I think this is fantastic. And if, for people who want to follow, you're saying it's on YouTube. Also, it'll be available through the IRA app as well, as you're saying. So that's fantastic.
We are hoping we have that deployed. So if not,
how do we find it on YouTube? Mm-hmm.
You can go to youtube.com/C/IRAIO, and that's AIRAIO.
Janine, thanks for coming on and telling us about it. Good luck with it. It sounds like a fantastic thing, and come back soon.
Hopefully you guys will enjoy it.
You've been listening to the Best of Double Tap on YouTube. New videos are published throughout the week. To make sure you don't miss out, head to YouTube and subscribe now. Search for Double Tap Video. Thanks for listening, and catch you next time.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.